Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. It sure is abounded with deer, boars, porcupines, gavayas, elephants, baboons, lions, monkeys, mongooses, and musk deer. Purport. Musk deer are not found in every forest, but only in places like Bindu Sarovara. They are always intoxicated by the aroma of musk secreted from their navels. Gavayas, the species of cow mentioned herein, bear a bunch of hair at the end of their tails. This bunch of hair is used in temple worship to fan the deities. Gavayas are sometimes called chamaris, and they are considered very sacred. In India, there are still gypsies or forest mercantile people who flourish by trading kasturi or musk and the bunches of hair from the chamaris. These are always in great demand for the higher classes of Hindu population, and such business still goes on in large cities and in villages in India. Anyway, Prabhupada is explaining some of the details here. Looking at the general picture, this Bindu Sarovara is a very attractive place, sacred place of Lord Vishnu, and the spiritual locales of the Lord's pastimes are always beautiful and attractive. And the Lord appears sometimes in the cities and sometimes in the country. He enjoys both kinds of life. Of course, Krishna's favorite place is out in the country, the countryside of Vraja Mandala. The urban part is only his second favorite. And then that Mathura expands into even a bigger city, Dwarka. But Krishna's original favorite place is out in the natural atmosphere. And even materialists, even those who have no connection with Krishna, no interest in Krishna, they're interested in nature. Even the factory workers in the cities like to go out the country for their weekend and get some fresh air. There's an attraction, natural attraction, everyone feels toward nature. You may not be able to live out there, but you like to go at least spend a couple of hours out in the fresh air, have a picnic, breathe the air in the forest, take a walk. This is a natural, this is a normal attraction. Actually, it's because this is the original life. Nature is originally not material nature, but spiritual nature. And the spiritual Prakriti is arranging for Krishna's enjoyment along with his devotees. Yogamaya, especially in Vrajadham, is making arrangements for Krishna's pleasure pastimes. And what we call nature, the atmosphere, the flora and fauna, the animals and the plants, the vegetation, they're arranged for Krishna's enjoyment. Actually, here in Vraja, there are two deities, Purnamasi and Vrindadevi, who are in charge of this department. Purnamasi is Yogamaya herself, and Vrindadevi is the presiding deity of Vrindavan Forest. Every day, before Krishna begins his pastimes, they're up before everybody else, arranging for the day's upcoming pastimes. Whatever Krishna is going to do that day, they make special arrangements. And it's described, I don't know where, maybe in Govinda Lilamrita, not that I've read it, that Purnamasi and Vrindadevi keep godams or warehouses in various places throughout Rajadham where they have stocked the animals, the plants that might be desired and the different natural features. And they just take out of the warehouse and put in place for the day's pastimes. That is described. So this is the spiritual nature. It's all used for Krishna's pleasure. And we have primordial, in the material world, primordial nature. Well, that means without the human beings. Human beings come and make a different situation. They make a mess of everything. They upset the balance of nature from one point of view. Things go on differently before the human beings are on the scene. Nature is natural. Human beings make everything unnatural. But also that, although there is a romantic image of that, back to nature, but what is actually going on in material nature? In other words, what's going on among the living beings other than the human beings? Apadani Chatushpadam. How does it begin? I can't remember. Anyway, the animals who have no legs are food for those who have four legs. In other words, the lowest species of animals, or even the vegetables who have no legs, they have no limbs like animals do. They're immobile. In other words, the immobile creatures, the vegetation, they're the food for some of the animals. And then those animals are food for the carnivorous animals. And then on the top of the food scale are the human beings, many of whom eat the animals. The four-legged animals are food for the two-legged animals. That's the wonderful arrangement of material nature, that everyone is in immediate danger of being someone else's lunch. Yeah. That what goes on is actually going on in this wonderful romantic nature is slaughter. That everybody is potentially food for somebody else. So, although the romantic image is there, the reality is quite grim. Life in nature. Therefore, the human beings, although they have their attraction to nature, they don't live too closely to it. They build their villages and their cities to protect themselves from being someone else's food. They organize societies with laws so that they don't slaughter each other. And they try to be civilized in some way. That's the what distinguishes human beings from animals. They try to diminish the violence, if possible. Although human beings manage, materialistic human beings manage to be quite violent anyway. And they devise ways to be much more violent than the animals. This is all what happens when nature becomes material. When the spiritual element is lost, when our connection with the Supreme Person is forgotten, then life becomes grim, becomes a fierce struggle for survival. Obviously so among the animals, and less obviously so maybe among the human beings. Although it's hard to judge which is worse, to be a civilized modern human being undergoing all the horrors of modern civilization, including war, pestilence, and so on, or being an animal in constant danger of your life. You can take your pick, but both are horrible. Both, any situation in the material world, up to the position of the demigods and great sages, is grim, is fearsome, terrible, frightening. The attraction that nature has is because of the original nature is spiritual. In Vaikuntha, the creatures don't eat one another. They manage to go on and maintain their lives without having to devour other creatures. Or even, I suppose, the vegetables who were eaten, offered to Krishna and to Narayana as prasadam, they don't lose their lives. They can be eaten over and over again, whatever the dynamics is. There is no slaughter involved in the process of having to eat. Everything, there is, the life is non-violent in the spiritual world. So that's what we really want to take shelter of. The non-violent nature, the spiritual nature. Daivihi esha gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. This maya of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is actually a terrible prison. It's a fortress, durga, mamamaya duratyaya. So duratyaya means you cannot get out. You cannot go beyond. You cannot transcend material nature. You're stuck in it. That is basically the definition of what a prison is. It's a structure, a institution that you're kept in against your will and not allowed out of. That's the form of punishment that is devised. Instead of killing you or chopping off your limbs or exiling you, they lock you up in a prison. That's modern version of punishment for serious criminals. Even for murder, they'll just lock you up for the rest of your life. That's durga, fortress. So the rebellious living entities are expelled from the spiritual world, but then they're also put in the fortress of maya, put into prison. So they can't just come back to Vaikuntha after being kicked out and cause more trouble. They're locked up in the fortress of material nature. And just like there are different kinds of prisons in different situations for different degrees of criminality, there are low security prisons where minor criminals who are not violent and not dangerous can undergo less severe punishment and better conditions. And then there are the high security prisons for the dangerous and incorrigible prison criminals, where conditions are very bad. Similarly, material nature has three modes. Everyone is kept under control by one of these three modes, or more usually a combination of the three, according to how bad we are. If we're very rebellious and very envious, we have to be put down into the mode of ignorance, the high security prison of the mode of ignorance, where our intelligence is taken away. That's what ignorance means. You can't think properly. That's ignorance. There are many species of life which are strongly predominated by the mode of ignorance. Animal life, basically, and lower species of vegetables. They are deep in the mode of ignorance. And even many human beings. There are 400,000 human species, because that includes very ignorant and uncivilized human beings. It even includes the monkeys, simians. They're also in that category, among the 400,000. That's why there are so many human species, because it includes monkeys. These baboons and ordinary monkeys, they're among the human species, actually. So even among human beings, even among Homo sapiens, there are many who are not very sapiens, not very intelligent. They're actually deeply, heavily influenced by the mode of ignorance, even in the human species, behaving no better than animals. So that mode of ignorance keeps us entrapped in high security arrangement. We don't have the freedom to do much damage, because we don't have the intelligence to do it, to make plans for causing much trouble. We simply do violence to ourselves, to our own bodies and minds, by intoxication and bad habits. And we can do harm to the people immediately around us, but we don't have the intelligence to harm many people when we're in the mode of ignorance. A man in the mode of passion has more liberty. although he's kept under control by his own distorted, passionate intelligence. He cannot see the truth. He's not allowed to see the truth. And he's impelled by his impulses and addictions in the mode of passion. They keep him under control. His neuroses and his obsessions. By them, material nature keeps him under control so that he can only do limited damage also. The person who is allowed to be kept under the influence of goodness instead, he's got the maximum freedom for a prisoner. He's able to actually have some perception of the spiritual reality in the mode of goodness. Sattvam yad brahma darshanam. Partivad dadano dumas tasmad agnis trayimaya vajasa tamasas tu vajas tasmad sattvam yad brahma darshanam. The mode of passion is superior to the mode of ignorance, and superior to passion is goodness. The example given by Sutta Goswami is of fire in its different conditions. Fire is dormant in the wood that can be kindled. It can be kindled. You can, by touching it with other fire, the fire that's sleeping in the wood can wake up, in effect. If you take the same fire and touch a stone with it, it won't burst into flame, because the fire is not dormant. It's not potential in the stone. But wood has fire, dormant fire in it, and therefore when you touch it with fire, it catches on fire. So, but unless you do that, the wood just doesn't manifest the symptoms of fire. The dharma, or the functional characteristics of fire, defining characteristics, are that it gives heat and light. Wood has fire in it, but that fire is not functioning according to its dharma. Just like the living entity in the material life is not exhibiting his true dharma. He's not manifesting, expressing his devotion to the Supreme Lord. He's trying to exist otherwise. So his dharma is vikritta. It's perverted. It's covered over. Similarly, the dharma, the heat, light-giving dharma of the fire, is similarly vikrita, dysfunctional, covered over, when it's dormant in the wood. So that's like the mode of ignorance. Fire is there, but it's completely unmanifest. Duma, smoke, is the next higher level manifestation of fire. When there is fire, there is smoke. And smoke is a manifestation of fire, but through the smoke you cannot see the fire clearly. When fire is covered by smoke, you can see the fire to some extent, but not clearly. You can begin to have some vision. So in the mode of passion, a person may have some religion. They have some concept of a superior God, supreme God, but never a clear one. Always twisted. His religious views are contaminated by his material misconceptions and by sectarianism. That is the limited degree of self-realization that one can have in the mode of passion. But in the mode of goodness, which is compared to the fire itself, Agni, actual fire, the fire itself, is what you can use to perform sacrifice. Trayimayaha. You need the fire, actual fire, to perform a Vedic sacrifice. You can't just do it with smoke or with just a block of wood. You have to actually evoke the fire. Similarly, if one wants actual self-realization, he has to come to the mode of goodness. In motive ignorance, you have very little chance of self-realization. In the motive passion, your self-realization will not be clear. It will not be correct. It will be half and half, right and wrong. But in the motive goodness, a human being has a good chance of actually realizing the Supreme. Sattvam yad brahma darshanam. Therefore, the Upanishads advise, tamasi ma jyotir gamaya. Don't remain in darkness, in the darkness of the lower modes. Come to the light. Realize the actual potential of human life by coming to the mode of goodness, fulfilling the responsibilities of a human being to live like a civilized human being and not like an animal. How does it go? Uttishta, jagrata, prapyavaran nibodata, kshurasya dhara, nishita duratyaya, durgam patam patastat kavayovadanti. Here again the words duratyaya is there, the word, and the word durga. Hard to go beyond. Duratyaya, insurmountable. So the statement in the Upanishad is that wake up. Come to your senses. You've obtained benedictions, the benediction of a human life. Prapyavaran nibodhata. So take into careful consideration what your responsibilities and what your opportunities are. Kshurasya dhara. The actual path of the fulfillment of human potential is very narrow and strict. It is like walking on the edge of a razor. The young generation, I guess, maybe that fad is over, the straight edge, and they went to something else, but at least some years ago, this was a popular idea, straight edge philosophy, that basically rebellion against their hippie parents who were, you know, lenient about any kind of self-discipline. They decided to rebel against their parents by accepting some discipline in their life. That's over with. Okay. We've picked up a few of them into our ISKCON society, but it's over. Okay. I'm not in touch with what's going on. Anyway, that idea is there in the Upanishads, that the path of self-realization is like the edge of a razor. If you deviate to the right or the left, too lenient or artificially strict, you're going to damage yourself. You're going to cause violence to yourself. You're going to be harmed if you don't stay straight on the correct path. So it's difficult to get out of the material world. It's difficult to come to the mode of goodness. To become civilized, in other words. To become an actual civilized human being, especially in Kali Yuga, is practically impossible. It's only by the special mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees that we have some chance of becoming, well, to speak of sadhus, paramahamsas, of even becoming civilized human beings. And not just us, barbarians from the West, but even people born in India, even people born in proper Brahmin families. The corruption is so pervasive. Even the Brahmanas are not living up to the standard in this advanced age of Kali Yuga. Only by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna, in showing his most extreme compassion and mercy, are we able even to come to the standard of simple, civilized human life. That's required. So, Hare Krishna. Namashraya koro chari durachar. Lord Nityananda's instruction is, just take shelter of Krishna's names, but also give up wicked behavior. You got to also try to be civilized. That's why Prabhupada gave us a program, chant Hare Krishna, but also follow four regulative principles. Those regulative principles are simply minimum for a civilized human being. They're not the mark of a great saint. They're the mark of an ordinary, decent human being to avoid these four kinds of sinful activities. So, first of all, chant Krishna's names, and then on the strength of chanting Krishna's names, try to be a decent human being. Then we can enter the actual path of self-realization. And then nature becomes benign. We can take shelter of the spiritual nature, where we don't have to worry about being someone else's victim or looking for victims ourselves. The cheaters and the cheated, we can get out of that cycle and take shelter of the benign atmosphere of the spiritual world. Daibhiyesha gunamayi. We can go beyond that and take shelter of Krishna's divine energy. Mahatmanas tumam parita. Daivim prakritim ashrita. Bhajanjananyamanaso gatva bhutarim avyayam. Those broad-minded, actually intelligent human beings who take shelter of, Krishna says, my divine energy, Daivi Prakriti, my divine nature, the spiritual nature rather than the material nature, they get the strength that I empower them, or material or the divine nature empowers them to be able to engage properly in my worship. They can worship me with exclusive devotion, ananya manaso, because they can understand who I actually am. Gatva bhutadim. They can understand how actually I am the source of all existence. That whatever attracts them, whatever used to attract them in material nature, is simply a dim reflection of my pleasure potencies. What gives them what used to give them pleasure in material life is just a perverted reflection of the actual pleasures of spiritual life. Buddhari bhavyam, and infallible. Everything fails in the material world. Everything is depleted. Everything gets old and dies. But in the spiritual world, nothing's depleted, nothing gets old, and nothing dies. We need to simply take shelter of Krishna and his internal energy, which is manifested in his devotees, and receive the blessings, the empowerment to worship Krishna and enter his spiritual world. Okay, so I'll stop there. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? All right, well, thank you. Yes, please.
Yes. You were talking about the condition of the material world and how really it's a place of suffering, one living as it's being eaten by another and so on.
Yes.
I was wondering, I seem to be more and more conscious as time passes by that as I try to live.
Yes.
In the mode of goodness, you know, failing, of course, but trying.
Yes.
One of the greatest sources of pain is the behavior of other people in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, you know, what advice can you give for, you know, those of us who are trying to live in the mode of goodness, but we have to live in this world alongside so
yes.
many other kinds of people doing so many crazy things. How can we sort of not be disturbed by their actions?
I heard something on the radio last night. I was looking for, actually, I wanted to hear some Hindi, practice Hindi, so I turned on the shortwave radio. There's some show about AIDS clinic in somewhere in Tamil Nadu, and they were interviewing the doctors. You know, how can you know, you get so, you know, it's so disappointing to have to be constantly, you know, serving these people who are dying. So how do you keep your spirits up? They were asking the doctors, and so they made the point, we have to keep a sense of humor. Yeah, so like that. We had to have a sense of perspective, and if we have to live with the material world, we have to be like the doctor who has to deal with sick people all the time. That's his job. He's got to avoid getting sick himself. not only in gross ways, but just subtly, you know, by being with sick people, you can affect your consciousness, and then you can get sick. You can lose the vitality of, you know, that you need to stay healthy by just being with people whose vitality is weak. So by associating with people who are infected by passion and ignorance, we can also get reinfected, or at least it makes it hard for us to, you know, to stay enthusiastically in the mode of goodness. So doctors do two things. First of all, they keep a certain degree of aloofness. You know, they don't associate with the sick people more than they have to, because they don't want to get sick. They're not going to be able to do their job if they get sick. So they have to keep a distance. So we also have to keep a distance from the materialists. We have to deal with them. We have to live with them sometimes. But we still have to keep our, you know, at least emotionally and psychologically, keep our distance and not, you know, vibrate sympathetically with their passions and their materialistic urges. We have to be enthusiastically passionate about our spiritual success so that we don't get infected, we don't vibrate sympathetically with the lower passions. You know, if we're not enthusiastic about spiritual life, then we can be infected by the material enthusiasms. Then it's dangerous. But if we're enthusiastic about our spiritual development, we can tolerate the association of materialists. And then also, if we're absorbed in our spiritual life and getting enlivenment from it, then we can maintain a proper perspective and a sense of humor. Not that we have to laugh at people, but I mean that we don't take everything too seriously. It's all just illusion. There are, you know, these are all eternal living entities, even though they're suffering, and the suffering is real. But it doesn't have to be like that. They can be relieved. They can be freed. And it's all, whatever it is, it's temporary. So we can see things in a proper perspective as long as we're satisfied with our spiritual life. That's the main requirement, is to feel satisfied yourself on a spiritual level. Then material things don't bother you so much. Even just seeing other people suffering doesn't bother you as much. It will always bother. What is it that Shukadeva is describing? The yogi who attains Maharloka, the higher planets beyond Swargaloka, where there's no misery. Ordinary miseries are not manifest there, in these higher planets. Maharloka, Satya, Janat, Satya, Tapa, Satya Loka. There people don't suffer old age, disease, death. Anidam vidam dukkha anudarshanat, except that they feel unhappy seeing how ignorant people below on the lower planets are suffering. They can see what's going on in the lower planets from their position. And it does cause them some grief, at least in a subtle way. So that's unavoidable, just to feel unhappy about other people's suffering. That's good. Otherwise, you'd have no motivation to do anything to help anybody. But you can't get too discouraged. You can't get discouraged by that, those pangs of conscience that I should be helping these people, they're suffering. The protection is to feel sufficiently satisfied in your own spiritual life, that you're convinced that you may not be tasting the full nectar, may not yet have, you know, realized prema, but at least you're getting some spiritual taste, so that you're convinced that this is real life. We don't have to suffer material life. And those who are, I see suffering, foolish people, they can be delivered. If they simply, you know, agree to cooperate, they can be brought back to the spiritual world. That conviction will make it possible to, you know, to tolerate living with such people, as far as I understand. Okay. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Okay, thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.